welcome to Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from New York City is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody.
Bontemps, I hear you're going out to Denver this weekend to see Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, too.
There is a clash of the Titans again. Second time in 12 days. Been told by big man himself he's going to be playing in the game if he's healthy. So I believe I got to check. Philly plays tonight, Thursday night against the Pacers. So knock on wood, Joel has no issues in the game today, and then he'll be playing Saturday.
Weren't you in Denver last year and then they didn't play? Weren't you there? Didn't you travel there for that?
I did travel there. I traveled there. Ironically, I traveled there to see the Bucks and the Sixers in back-to-back games in Denver, which is what is happening again this year, albeit in the opposite order. Noteworthy stuff going on Monday, too. But hopefully we see Joel and Jokic. First time Joel will be playing there in 4 years, so it'd be good to see him play there.
Okay, we can all look forward to that. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where he was involved in another banning, temporarily at least, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Fellas, done a lot of soul searching, a lot of social media scrolling. Ooh, ouch. I've reconsidered my career path after the events of the last 24 hours. I no longer intend to run for mayor of Dallas. My political ambitions have been crushed.
So you're
stuck with me here on the Hoop Collective, baby. Here to stay.
Need the Wolf of Wall Street thing in the background right now.
I'm not believing. So in case you missed it, another classic McMahon moment at a press conference. What?
I mean, what did I do? Reported the obvious? And
yeah,
I got my ground. It's not a McMahon moment.
It sure was. It was a McMahon moment. Come on.
I got something to say about this on my guy's behalf. I'm tired of people acting like the job of the media is to walk into the press conference and say, oh, how great is it to be in the presence of you, great player? It's not what the job is. Like, give me a break. Like, this nonsense with Luka yesterday was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. You guys, people probably see McMahon sitting in the seats on TV. It's right next to the bench. It's right next to the seats. You can hear everything that's going on.
The guy was literally 2 rows behind me.
Yeah, it's not like this is something that was made up. You literally reported what the guy said, and this turns into Luka going, oh, you're being mean to me.
It wasn't exactly an exclusive. Like, everybody on press row reported it. For some reason, he saw mine first, so I wasn't. But honestly, that part's not important. Luka being upset with me is irrelevant in the big picture. You know, as Bontemps said, there are a long list of people who have in their job description the requirement that they have to kiss Luka Doncic's ass or Superstar X's ass. That is not my job. I think much more relevant and interesting and overshadowed in this whole mix is this week it's been pretty clear that Jason Kidd does not consider that to be part of his job. He, I would say delicately, you could say passively, called the Mavericks out for constant complaining to officiating and losing their focus and getting frustrated by the refs after Monday's loss to the Celtics. He did it again after Wednesday's loss to the Suns, but he was specific with Luka Doncic. Now, also Grant Williams, which is a whole nother story, and we're not going to spend any time on that because, let's be honest, who cares about the seventh or eighth man? We do care about a perennial first-team All-NBA player, about an MVP candidate. And the simple fact of the matter is, this is what happened in that game. The Mavericks are up 16 midway through the second quarter. Luka's lighting it up, just as he often does against the Phoenix Suns. It's like Christmas all over again. And then the Suns go on a run. They cut the lead to 1 at halftime, which Luka limps off the court. He twisted that right ankle that's been bothering him, caused him to miss some time. And he's fussing, and I can't say he's cussing, but he's complaining to the officials all the way as he limps towards the tunnel. He got teed up. The second half started with Devin Booker making a technical free throw to tie the score. He scored 21 more points in that quarter. So he had 22 points in the quarter, more than the entire Mavericks team. The lead went from Mavs up 1 to start the quarter to Mavs down 28 when Luka decided to grow rabbit ears and get upset because a fan, an obnoxious guy who was swigging some Modelo's, wearing a El Valley Devin Booker jersey, said, "Luka, you're tired. Get your ass on a treadmill." And hey, not a pleasant thing to say, but it's not like out of bounds and heckling. And was it the first thing the guy said the whole game? No, but nothing rose above like, obnoxious fan heckling. Nothing was, you know. And so it gets down to this. 48 hours after his head coach calls Luka out for letting his frustration affect his focus, he melted down for an entire quarter when the Mavericks got outscored by 23 points and run out of their own gym. Sorry, that's a story.
Well, and every year you're chronicling whether he's going to get suspended because he's bumping up against technical foul limit, right? This is an annual exactly discussion. And as you wrote in your story, and I would say, I mean, I have some history with Jason Kidd too. I would say he pretty flatly said that Luka needs to be better with the refs.
Last night he sure did.
The direct quote was, in your story, you wrote, how can Kidd and the Mavs help Doncic manage that issue? That's a great question. Don't have an answer. We'll talk to him about it. He's a competitor. He likes to have discussions with the referees, but he has to be better. And as a group, we have to be better. But like you said, the whole group thing doesn't matter. Like, the guy in charge of the team is constantly yelling at the refs. He's constantly distracted by the refs. It's been a years-long problem now. And it's just, he just has to be better at managing his emotions in the game. Like, this has to be.
And then, you know, our job, again, is not to kiss their butts, but it's to chronicle the careers and specifically of the faces of the league in a lot of cases, which Luka unquestionably is. I mean, there's a handful of players who have proven they're good enough to be the best player on a championship team and a handful of players who pretty clearly have that ability. And he's in that second handful without question. And, you know, look, the vast majority of time that I write about him or talk about him, it's extolling his greatness because he is a historically great talent who has significant flaws. One is just the constant complaining and loss of composure. Two, which he has taken significant steps to address this season, but it's still a sensitive issue, is his conditioning. And again, that has improved. Clearly, he didn't like hearing about it the other night, which I get.
He didn't like hearing about it because Booker was busting his backside and he hates Booker. He hates losing to Booker.
And Booker was pretty entertained by the whole thing, I will say.
He certainly was.
Well, I love how Booker leans into this rivalry. That. I love how he leans into the rivalry. It's
a great rivalry. On both sides. They both hate each other. They both hate losing to each other. It's awesome. This is the kind of stuff that we like to see in the league. It's great.
Yeah,
it's
and what think about
so just so the listeners know, McMahon, tell them how Booker leaned into it.
Well, let me.
I have it right here. I have it right here. If you don't have it there, I appreciate the support. Booker told McMahon. I don't know what he said. I hope he didn't cross too many lines, and I'll be getting his information. If you can find it, let me know. He then went on to say, "I hope what he did wasn't too disrespectful, but I know in these crowded environments, we played a playoff series here. I've heard countless numbers of things." Usually you don't hear it at home. I'm sure that was a different thing for Luka, but it's part of the game. I usually don't let what I hear bother me. Nice little jab at the end.
And look, Booker's obviously had his things with the fans. And he also was like, hey, I enjoy the friendly banter. And I didn't make the story just because there was a lot to get in there last night, but I asked KD about it. And listen, online and in person, KD's had a few interactions with fans. We all understand that. And so
KD's got digital ears. He's got rabbit digital ears.
And so I asked KD about it and KD said, well, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk to me about handling hecklers.
That's
you know,
true.
He laughed. He says, it might be a little different because I'll heckle them back. And that's really what the exchange is. It's a quick exchange of fans. He said, I don't think too deeply about it. Somebody talks to me, I'll talk it back and we'll move on. That's usually how it goes. I mean, look, the simple fact of the matter is Luka got frustrated, completely lost his focus. The Mavericks as a team followed his lead and melted down the entire third quarter. And then he had a thin-skinned interaction or overreaction rather, where he requested for a loudmouth heckler wearing a Devin Booker jersey in Luka's house, which is
good seats.
Disrespectful in its own regard, requested for the guy to be ejected. I mean, it was a mid-game request, and then he followed up because it was the last minute of the third quarter. Then he followed up during the break between quarters. Now, I did get a call from a high-ranking Maverick source today. They wanted to clarify the fan was not actually ejected. After Luka pointed him out to security, an arena staffer came over and had a conversation with him. I am told that the fan exited voluntarily. But again, story's not that the guy got ejected. It's that Luka asked for him to be ejected. And by the way, Luka thought the guy got ejected.
Right.
I'm sure the guy voluntarily left a really good seat for a game where his guy's team was blowing out the guy against him's team. I'm sure. Well, I'm sure he just got up and said, "Ah, you know, it's okay. I'll exit stage right."
Well, he did bring a Modelo Tallboy with him, and it wasn't his first. Look,
my opinion on it is fans can say what they want, but I don't think it's good form to cross the line and get personal like that. Obviously, that's not going to change. That's the nature of fandom. Yeah. I also think that it's so frustrating watching Luka play. He's one of the most talented players I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. He is absolutely magic and with the ball, and I can't take it.
No,
it's unbearable to watch. And I'm going to tell you, like, you guys heard me tell this story from over the summer.
You're talking about the complaining, the constant complaining to referees.
I can't take it. It's unbearable. I just, you know, and that face that he makes, I mean, I can close my eyes. I can just see the face. I'm just like, I don't like, look, and I admit the guy gets hit and doesn't get called all the time. He frequently has a case. But the way he goes about it, I mean, I'm just talking about the aesthetics of the game. I'm not even talking about his team. Like, it's unwatchable.
What Jay Kidd is trying to get through to him, and honestly, at times in the last couple of years, Jay Kidd has done this before. He's picked his spots and called Luka out, and Luka has been receptive to it and been publicly accountable. These last two games, he basically is like, you know, that's what he said. That's an exact quote after the Celtics game. That's what he said. And then, well, do you think it was a factor? No. And, you know, because the last night against the Suns, he also basically said he didn't think that losing focus with the refs was a factor. But it's like, it's counterproductive. It's counterproductive because he does lose focus. He worries more about the three refs than the five guys on the floor wearing the other team's jersey. It's also counterproductive because, and this is what Jay Kidd mentioned last night, when you are going ballistic and complaining about a call 30 seconds into the game, it's like, dude, they're going to tune you out. And then it's the ref's job not to take it personally. Just like, frankly, it's our job.
For sure.
Not to take it personally when a star, like, look, well, he's frustrated. Okay. I get it. I'm not, like, I piss people off. I understand that. That's life.
Well, I told you guys, you know, about the what happened in the World Cup where, you know, he got ejected as they got eliminated. And in that case, he was... This was an all-timer for me. You know, he was heckling the executive. I don't remember the name. Is the lead executive of FIBA. He was
the president of FIBA, right?
Yeah. He was heckling a fan in the second row. The president was sitting in the second row.
Right.
He came over to center court and heckled them about the officials and then got soon ejected.
He overheats. And when you overheat on a consistent basis with referees, at best, they'll tune you out. At worst, they will succumb to the human nature of saying, you know what, man, screw that guy. He ain't getting the benefit of the doubt from me.
Well, and it's also just if you're going to be that obsessed with the referees or anything other than the game itself, you can't be fully focused on what's in front of you, right? But that, like, forget the aesthetic part. I agree. It's annoying to watch sometimes, but it's much more relevant to me that for as great as he is, if you're that focused on the refs, you can't be that focused as you need to be on the games. And like you said, last night's a great example for Wednesday night. Playing that game, it's a competitive game. Yeah, Kyrie's not playing, but they're winning the game. Yep. And then all of a sudden, their whole team goes to hell. It's not surprising that the head of the snake, being completely distracted, plays a part in that. Like, well, if you're the leader of the team, you just cannot lose your cool like that on a regular basis, and he does all the time.
And, you know, Jay Kidd is attempting to manage it. You know, you can say whether you think his techniques are wise or not, whatever. It also is difficult when the face of the ownership group, no longer the majority owner, but Mark Cuban, the guy who's calling all the shots, is a lot of times during these timeouts, during the breaks and play between quarters, right next to Luka yelling at the refs. And
that's been going on for 20 years.
Yes. I'm just saying it sets a tone. And as he's watching the game, like this whirly bird replay thing, Cuban's been doing that for years, but he's not, he's been doing it before there was such a thing as a replay challenge. Because what he's doing is he's telling the people who run the Jumbotron, play that again, play that again. And by the way, funny little aside here. So you saw the crazy Jaylen Brown crossover that sent Luka to the floor. And then look, Luka was like, hey, you know, great move. Like, you know, you got me, whatever.
Can't blame the officials for that one.
No. And Luka kind of had fun with that post game. But people were like, why in the world did the American Airlines Center?
That's what Tim Hardaway, didn't Tim Hardaway freak out?
Oh, yeah. So they show it on the big screen, right on the Jumbotron or whatever you want to call it. And Hardaway is screaming. I mean, I know profanity is very offensive, but Luka didn't seem too bothered with Hardaway saying multiple expletives towards those folks. what the F you doing? Are we home or are we away? Stop that stuff, whatever. Well, the reason that they played it was because Cuban did the old whirly bird thing because he thought that Brown pushed off. There was no push off. There was just a hell of a move.
Beautiful storytelling. I love that. That's great stuff, baby. Cuban, oh my God.
So Jaylen Brown was asked about after the game. Brown was like, they replayed that here? He said, somebody should be fired. Well, you can't fire that guy. You can't fire the guy who was responsible for it.
Oh my God, I love that. So is it story time? Can I tell a story about a player screaming at the scorers table, or do we not want to break the flow?
Yes, story time with Wendy.
Remember, he's now a head coach in Europe. Šarūnas Jasikevičius played for the Indiana Pacers. So he was playing for the Pacers, and I was covering a game in Cleveland, and was right at the end of the third quarter. And the Cavs public address announcer, gorgeous deep voice. I think he's does the games in Brooklyn now. He had a bathroom emergency, couldn't make it till the end of the third quarter. So he sprinted out and called over the in arena host, like sort of the backup guy. Well, it was a blowout game. It was 25 points at the end of the third, but the worst possible thing happened, which was Šarūnas Jasikevičius, one of the hardest names you could pronounce in the NBA, scored. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so the correct thing to do in this point is just to say nothing. It's just to, you know, don't announce the opposing player scoring. It's happened before. It's no big deal. But the guy tried to do it. And, you know, it's not his job to learn the pronunciation of the visiting players. His job is to say, who wants a free T-shirt?
You know? He's a hype man. He's not a PA guy.
So, and the other thing about Jasikevičius, Saris, as they call him in Europe, he's known for a temper, and he botched the name. He botched the name very badly. It was like a different name. It was kind of sort of a hokey voice. And so it sounded to him like they were mocking him. Don't mock Lithuanians.
Oh, no.
So the quarter ends like a second later, and Šarūnas came over looking for his pound of flesh. Shaking his fist, was screaming. So he did not ask for the PA guy to get ejected. But that, I mean, I was laughing so hard I could barely breathe, because I know that I knew the guy. He meant no harm. I saw what had happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, Devin Booker, by the way, last night had 46. The Suns have won seven in a row. They've had a player score over 40 in four straight games. Durant, the previous two. Booker had 52 against the Pelicans last week. In the game where they started the win streak, Kevin Durant, which was in LA against the Lakers, I was at the game. Booker had 31 in that game. Durant went to Booker before the game and said, hey, they had scuffled a little bit. They had a couple losses in a row. And Durant said, hey, don't worry about taking care of me. I'll take care of me. You worry about taking care of you. Because, you know, Booker playing point guard or whatever, I know everybody says that it's no problem, but I don't think it's something you just pick up, you know, in your sixth and seventh NBA season. And ever since Durant did that, Booker has been awesome. He's averaged 32 over the last seven games. He's looking for his shot again. He's playing grade A basketball, and the Suns are winning. Now, they've had a couple of big comebacks in there. It hasn't been the cleanest winning streak, but they've won seven in a row. And
they got a bunch of scufflers coming up too. I mean, they got a chance to rip off several more too. Got a long road trip, but they're all winnable games.
Yeah. But last night was game one of a seven game road trip. So
yeah. And they won it. And by the way, the Suns won in Dallas. Yeah, I know Kyrie didn't play, where Durant scored 12 points. Which is kind of the point of this team, is that they have so much firepower that they can survive a night like that.
Look, they've been phenomenal in January. Once Beal's been able to get his legs under them, you know, they're starting to get a little bit of rhythm. And, you know, you mentioned kind of the point book thing. I do think that has been a successful transition. I do argue that you can't just give a guy the point guard responsibility at that point of his career. I would introduce you to a gentleman named James Harden as proof that you can. But the plan was never just, hey, Devin Booker, you're the point guard. You handle all the point guard responsibilities. The plan was always to have Beal kind of share, take a little bit less, but share some of those. So Beal coming back really helps that. I mean, Beal as your third option is a ridiculous amount of firepower, and they move the ball. You know, they feel like they're starting to create an identity. You know, and I asked KD, you know, okay, what is that identity? He said a team that's never going to be out of a game, which they've got 2 20-plus point comebacks during his winning streak. That would prove that. Team that's going to make the right pass, play off each other, you know, on defense, swarm, create pressure, you know, being selfish, second or third efforts. And look, 7 wins does not a season make. You know, they don't feel like we've arrived, we're here, mission accomplished. They certainly like the direction things are going right now with the Suns, and they should.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on them as they go through this road trip.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, barrel-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
So the Bucks got a win over the Cavs. Broke the Suns, I think, have the longest win streak now because the Cavs' 8-game win streak was broken by the Bucks in their first game after letting Adrian Griffin go. Doc Rivers did not coach the game. Joe Prunty, coached. Giannis had a triple-double. And I have to say, and we talked with Jamal Collier, our colleague, about the move a couple of days ago when Griffin was fired. It's been covered ad nauseum. What I am going to be fascinated is that it's still the same personnel. And you're bringing in, you know, this happened a couple of years ago when the Timberwolves hired Chris Finch mm-hmm. off of the Raptors staff and said, here, take this team. And it ended up working out. I didn't think it possibly would, but he ended up really turning them around. One of the things that the Bucks have talked about, Bontemps, is the lack of organization, the lack of the strategy issue. So, you know, their personnel they're still going to be defensively challenged with what they've done with the roster. We'll see whether Doc coming in midstream is able to truly make a difference on the defense, because that is where his job mm-hmm. is going to lie, is trying to get them out of being the 22nd, 8th worst, I would say, better described the defensive team.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, look, Doc is a proven, successful head coach, obviously. I'm sure he will be on a variety of levels a better fit than Adrian Griffin. I think probably most importantly, he will have the respect, I would assume, of the star players on the team, which, I mean, Jamal and Ramona wrote a story about Adrian Griffin getting fired. Adrian Griffin got fired the moment Giannis checked himself back in the game the night before Thanksgiving in Boston. Game I was at. I was at that game. I watched that happen. And I said to myself, I don't know when this is going to happen, but this is going to end one way. Because when that happens in a national televised game, huge game between the two marquee teams in the East, and this happens in front of everybody, it's a sign that the best player on the team just does not respect the coach.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, though, while all that is true, the Bucks are a horrific defensive team from a personnel standpoint now. And I just don't see what Doc Rivers is going to be able to do to change that. I have a whole bunch of numbers from Stats Williams, and you can say that the Bucks have been a top 10-ish defensive team when they've been in drop coverage of Brook Lopez. But the key number to me of all the various stats they have is the Bucks were third defensively guarding on-ball screens last year, according to Second Spectrum, which basically means their guards did a good job getting over screens. led by Jrue Holiday. This year, they're down to 25th. And at the end of the day, their perimeter defense can't stay in front of anybody. And you can do whatever you want with the drop. You can have Brook Lopez back at the rim. It makes them a decent matchup for Philly, ironically, Doc's former team, if they play in the second round. By the way, last I checked, I've meant to look it up earlier. I will check it when I'm done talking. The Bucks were projected as of a day or two ago to be fourth, and the Sixers and Cavs were projected to be second and third in that order. So I'm curious if after a couple of
the Cavs have a more favorable record. They actually had if they won these two games against the Bucks this week, they had a chance to catch them.
Well, the interesting thing is Milwaukee, as we've talked about, according to our internal basketball power index, had the easiest schedule in the league through the first half of the season. And they had the hardest schedule in the league over the second half of the season. So we will see how this goes. But, you know, people have talked a lot about the transition defense. Transition defense hasn't been great, but it's more mediocre than the worst in the league, as some have said. Like, it's not going to be just as simple as play harder to fix it. Like, they have real structural flaws that they've had from the moment they made the trade. And the bet was Dame and Giannis on offense will be enough to fix it. Right. And
you know what?
It hasn't been.
Well, again, you say that. Where are they in the standings? Like, I get things were
obviously
a mess. The man got fired with a 30-13 record, though. They're still
we're going to stop talking about the record because they just fired the coach.
Okay.
So the idea the idea that it's all good. No, but I mean, I'm not saying for you, but I mean, like, the idea that, because the Bucks were saying it too. Oh, everything's fine. We're going to be fine. It's all going to be good. We're winning games. Things are great. Well, things aren't great because you just fired
the
coach.
You're always saying something bad, Bontemps. It had to be you to say something bad.
Yeah, you're always the first one to point this out.
Right. That's right.
Listen, Giannis also said he had no idea this was coming. So you're not under oath. Like, we don't have to believe everything that they say. I mean, come on, dude. Like, they're not. Sometimes guys are full of crap. It's okay. We all understand that. We're grown.
It's totally okay. Yes, I know.
But
it's totally fine.
They don't have to be an elite defensive team to have a chance to be a contender. They just can't be a really bad defensive team. I do think buy-in can make a difference. Look, if Doc can get them from bottom 10 to middle of the pack, they are still a historically elite offensive team, and I think there's meat on the bone for them on that end of the floor. Like, Dame and Giannis, like, there's a lot of meat on the bone as far as those two working as a tandem instead of just kind of two separate brilliant offensive talents. But it's not, can Doc Rivers get them back to being an elite defensive team? Because, like, you know, he doesn't have a magic wand. He can't get Jrue Holiday back on the roster. It's, can they be average defensively with that group? And that's his challenge. And that's why he's getting the big bucks.
Yeah. The thing about it is that nobody in the
big
league
Bucks, get it?
Good job. Nobody in the league, including the players on the Bucks, looked at this team and said, oh yeah. When I was watching very closely to see yesterday if a litany of coaches came out and like ripped the Bucks for this move. I saw Magic did. Like, I don't know if it was on social media or whatever, but like, remember when David Black got fired and Greg Popovich like made this impassioned speech?
Yeah, Carlisle did the same.
Carlisle, who's the president of the Coach Association, this is like press play for him whenever like a successful coach gets fired.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed something. I saw nothing. I saw no coach come out and be like, this is a miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, I didn't hear
it. The guy
was
30-13 got fired.
It was a whole lot of, hey, if it can happen to him, it can happen to anybody. We understand how tough this business is. That, you know, that kind of stuff. But you're right. There was no like, wow, this guy got screwed.
Right. So that kind of says all you need. That's sort of all you need to say. And I mean, I don't think anybody thinks it's personal. That's all you need to say.
But I mean, listen, why was Adrian Griffin hired? Let's just be honest. Because
signed off on it. That's right.
Right. Why was he fired? Because Giannis checked out on him. And so, listen, the Milwaukee Bucks, as I mentioned to somebody at the American Airlines Center last night, are not the first NBA franchise to bend over in a pretzel to figure out a way to kiss the butt of their generational talent. That is part of the business of running an NBA franchise. You do whatever it takes to try to make and or keep those kind of talents happy. But it's got them into a situation now where they're making a midseason coaching change and paying three head coaches. And I'm not crying for the billionaires. I don't, look, Jimmy Haslam's still going to be able to pay his
bills. I'm not crying for Doc Rivers either.
No. Although I was looking forward to seeing Doc, who's supposed to call that game last night. Would have loved to hear his take on Luka's discussions with the referees, but he hopped the flight out of Dallas yesterday.
Yeah, Mike Breen had a classic comment in the stand-up before the game with Doris. Yes, he did.
What'd he say?
Yeah, I knew you were at the game, McMahon. He goes, I'd like to thank Doc for his many weeks of service.
By the way, Jay Kidd had a pretty good one, too. He always starts the pregame press conference reading the injury report. Kyrie Irving, you know, Kyrie's going to be a game-time decision. We'll go through his rooms to make a decision. Luka's available. Dante Exum is available. Seth Curry available. Doc Rivers is out.
That's pretty good. I love it. I love it. All right, so we'll see how the Bucks go. It's a tough thing that Doc is picking up, and I get why he took it because it's a team that can win the championship this year, and he just got the job in January. Like I get why he took it.
But I mean he got a ton of money. It's a team with big time talent. Like mm-hmm. It makes all the sense in the world from that standpoint. I mean, it's you know we'll just see what he can do. And like we said, I think the buy-in will help. But at the end of the day, the two teams they probably have to go through in the East, Philly and Boston, are top five in offense and defense. So it's going to be a hard road, even if the Bucks get back to average, to be good enough to beat both of those teams in the playoffs.
Listen, history tells you the Milwaukee Bucks, they're going to be celebrating a championship in that Deer District in the plaza that Giannis built, because there's only been two times in NBA history when a team has been off to this type of successful start in terms of the standings and fired their coach midseason. The, what was it, 1980 Lakers, I believe, with Jack McKinney, 10-4. A gentleman named Pat Riley took over and off, here's showtime, baby.
Well, that was on the bicycle accident.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's circumstantial, but yeah.
Circumstantial. That's one. And then the other one is the aforementioned David Blatt. And yes. That's when Ty Lue took over. And next thing you know, here come LeBron and the Cavs. And they are coming back from 3-1 in the finals to claim Cleveland's first championship since Wendy was a wee lad.
It was 64. I wasn't a glint in my parents' eye before.
Oh, you look much older than you are.
Thank you. The Grays are coming. More story time.
I got a few more last night.
More story time. When Ty Lue took over, his first game, the Cavs got boat raced by the Bulls. Like they scored like 86 points or something like that. And Ty came into the post-game press conference and said, every one of our players is out of shape. We're not ready to play this style. He basically dressed them all down, like, you know, the new sheriff's in town. He basically said, we want to play fast tempo. And these guys aren't in good enough shape to play up tempo. So the next morning, LeBron at like 7 in the morning or 7:30 in the morning, posts a photo of himself working out, but does it wearing next to no clothes, showing off his physique. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a double thing going on there. One was, I'm listening to my coach and I'm getting in shape. But by the way, he wasn't talking about this guy.
By the way, I'm pretty damn chiseled as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, he was.
Jackson, our high quality producer, snarkily corrected me. Paul Westhead took over.
That's correct.
Jack McKinney.
Jason Siegel. Jason Siegel took over, and then Adrian Brody followed.
Is that a Winning Time reference?
It is.
Yes. I got a trivia question from the machine.
Oh, my God. Oh, he's back out of retirement.
I'm telling you what.
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, I mean, it'd be a good time to jump in with it.
You've been like the Ben Simmons of the Wiz of the Quiz lately. Well, we haven't seen
listen, Brian likes to complain every time about having to do it. So I haven't done it in a minute.
Well, if you don't have 38 answers, it wouldn't take you so long to come up with
that's true.
Well, that's true.
And now to present today's trivia question, the Wiz of the Quiz, Tim Bontemps.
Did you got the Patrick Mahomes won another road game last weekend, beat the Bills that inspired this trivia question from KP?
Mavericks fan Patrick Mahomes.
Yes. Do you
Bills fan Tim Bontemps?
Family certainly. Family certainly is. I was as a wee lad also. Not much anymore, but my sisters were very sad on Sunday. Patrick Mahomes did the Jordan and the Cavs move again to the Bills. Who has the best all-time winning percentage as a road player in the history of the NBA?
So I'm guessing it's not as easy as LeBron.
It's not LeBron.
Bill Russell.
It's not Bill Russell.
Is it an obvious one?
It's got to be a Celtic who just like dominated.
It's not.
For, like,
it's not a Celtic. I have the entire top 10.
But I don't want the top 10.
Well, I know you didn't want the top 10. That's why I asked for the number
one. All right. Now we have to ask for a hint because we're talking about 77
years. Hall of Famer.
No, current player.
Oh. It's a best all time and it's a current player. Steph Curry.
Nope.
That's a Hall of Famer.
Well, he's not yet.
Right.
Is
this guy going to be a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Okay.
Not a Warrior.
Klay Thompson.
Not a Warrior.
Kevin Durant?
Nope.
Wait. Well, holy stumping.
Kyrie. No, he had some bad years early in his career.
Luka Doncic.
No.
All right.
He'll be a Hall of Fame player. Has never been on a bad team.
George Niang.
George Niang. George Niang.
He's like third.
George Niang is ninth all time.
Bang, bang, baby.
There are two active players.
Wait.
This player and George Niang.
Jason Tatum.
No.
Oh, you said nice.
There's a might be a minimum game requirement on why Tatum isn't on it. I would think he'd be close, but he is not in the top 10 from what KP sent me.
All right, go ahead.
Butler.
Not Jimmy Butler.
Damn it. I am
this guy has two championships.
Two championships.
Oh, Kawhi.
Kawhi Leonard.
Wow.
There is one other player who is active who has not played this season, who is in the top 10.
Active who hasn't played this season. All right, help me out. I can't think. It's been a while.
Danny Green. Is the other one.
Danny Green.
He's fourth.
He's active?
Is he active?
Well, he hasn't retired. Just like he hasn't. He's
not on. He's not on a roster. He's not active.
Not on a roster. He's not like.
Frankly, you know what's going to happen? Winnie's going to tell him, hey, you're going to retire soon and bring the news to him.
Top five are Kawhi, Magic Johnson, Tim Duncan, Danny Green, and Michael Cooper.
Michael Cooper. I love those socks Michael Cooper used to wear.
And then 6 to 10 is Manu, Larry Bird, Tony Parker, George Niang, and Scottie Pippen.
George Niang. I love it. The minivan, baby. The minivan travels.
You should get a special mention there, McMahon, for getting George Niang. That was more impressive than the...
Yeah, I'll tell you this. George Niang didn't win any road football games at high school.
Here we go.
I promise you that. Yeah,
KP was very happy we could get a podcast into the trivia question. So minivan's in it.
My alma mater, where I had my Al Bundy football moments, no longer has a freaking football program. They ditched it.
So they're undefeated this year.
Absolutely,
it's like Bonaventure, undefeated since 1954, I believe.
Speaking of alma maters, I have to issue a special apology to Wolves guard Jordan McLaughlin. I had a faux pas last night. I was at the Wizards Wolves game in DC yesterday, and Jackson, our producer, is going to be annoyed with this. I was like, I had a brain fart, and I was walking in the locker room, which, by the way, compliments to the Wolves who were playing Daft Punk in the locker room. 21 years covering the NBA, never have I heard Daft Punk being played. Wolves were blasting it. Blasting it.
I don't know what's funnier, songs. You not knowing who Daft Punk is or Brian applauding the Wolves on their music choices.
Well, the only thing that would be more impressive to me is James Brown needs to be played at more NBA arenas. But I mean, Ant Edwards was singing.
Mike Conley probably has James Brown on an 8-track as old as he is.
Anyway, I come up to Jordan McLaughlin, who I know a little bit, and I said hello. And I made the mistake in my head thinking that he had gone to Syracuse.
Mm.
And I was in the process of, by the way, he went to SC, like a horrible
mistake. It's not even close.
No. And which is what he kind of looked at me funny, like, what the hell are you saying? Jackson says he's not mad. He's just disappointed.
I mean, that is a very weird thing to mess up.
It is very weird because, like, you know, obviously I don't know every player in the league where they went on top of my head, especially if they're a third stringer. And it was embarrassing. So I apologize, Jordan.
I don't know if you guys can hear that, but there's a chopper circling overhead. I'm concerned. They're coming for me, boys.
Well, McMahon, it was nice knowing you.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. So anyway, I spent some time with the Wolves. I had this terrific idea. I feel like we needed some more Wolves coverage since they're, number one team in the West. And I was going to try to go catch them in Minnesota, but then like the worst weather for 10 days hit the Midwest where like it was 10 inches of snow and minus 15 degrees. And I am not exaggerating on either of those. It was minus 15 pre wind chill. Okay. So I went out to DC and it was going to be great. I was going to catch the Wolves. They had a little game with Charlotte the night before. No problem.
Easy little stroll against the sorry Hornets.
Carl Towns, who I was going to sit down with on Tuesday, goes for 34 in the first half.
44, but who's counting? Oh, he was. So it was his teammates. 44.
I know the whole world was watching Embiid put up 70, but like Cat was on pace for almost the same.
There were a lot of people watching the fourth quarter of that game in the Sixers locker room, including me and including the guy who scored 70 points.
Wondering 44 would be on pace for 88, sir.
He had 34.
No, he didn't.
He had 44 at half. 44 at half?
Oh,
my God. I thought it was 34.
Nice job. Nice job, Brian. Nice job.
Well,
Jackson said hopefully on the Hornets feed watching Eric Collins. The sound was off, but the game was on. So,
yeah, well, I think
much commentary in the locker room about the game from everyone watching.
Well, long story short, the Hornets won. Carl Towns got benched in the fourth quarter because he was throwing up shots that Chris Finch didn't like.
Throwing up shots, not contesting any on the other end.
Blowing wide open layups.
In fairness, nobody was contesting any on the other end.
He had plenty of company in that misery. That's for sure.
Chris Finch came in and, as the kids would say, ethered his team, and specifically Carl in the post-game press conference.
He basically said, like 5 seconds into the presser, said it was an immature performance.
Disgusting and immature, I believe, is how he started it.
Disgusting, defensive, and immature performance. That was literally the first sentence out of his mouth in the post-game.
That was harsh.
For the whole game. And he basically said that it was just a stat chasing display of puke. I mean, that's not a direct quote, but that's a summary.
Yeah.
He was displeased.
Yeah.
How'd that go over?
And then a few questions later, one of the reporters, John Krasinski of Office fame, just kidding, different spelling, asks him, "You were talking about Cat, right?" And he's like, "Yeah."
Absolutely, he said.
Yes, absolutely.
Just to be clear, by the way, that's one of those where it's like, J. Kidd rips the Mavericks for losing focus because of the referees. You're talking about Luka, right? Obviously.
It reminded me of when Magic Johnson came on to First Take after he quit his job as a Lakers president. And Stephen A. was like, "Did anybody else, when you say people are backstabbing, were you talking about anybody else besides Rob Pelinka?" "No, just Rob."
just to clarify.
Yeah, just the way he said it was funny. Anyway, 12 hours later, I was in a hotel in D.C. and I was watching the Timberwolves arrive. And on a gigantic screen in this gorgeous hotel lobby was NBA Today. I guess it was more than 12 hours, 15 hours. And as Chris Finch is walking through the lobby, his
rant is
running on NBA Today. Like, he walked right in front of it. I was like, "Oh boy. All right, let's have our interview."
Awkward.
The windy jinx continues.
I hadn't even done anything yet.
Well, you were preparing to talk to him. The jinx was in full effect.
Yeah, I actually
was a pretty strong. You remember Wendy last week telling us Mike Conley might be the most important Timberwolf, not the most talented, not the most productive.
Yeah. Yes.
The most important. Well, Mike Conley was wearing a very fancy little puffer vest while sitting on the bench resting that night.
He also didn't play Wednesday night against the Wizards either. Got a hamstring, I think a tight hamstring. By the way, I think though, just in general, regardless of that, I think if the Wolves are going to do anything at the deadline, I think it's to get another guard because
they, you know, they started Nikhil Alexander Walker. He's a backup. And my man, Jordan McLaughlin, Syracuse, great, was playing too. But like I wouldn't be surprised if these games with Conley.
They have the inverse problem of Milwaukee, which is ironic given we're talking about a team where we just got done talking about Karl-Anthony Towns scoring 62 points, but they've been the best defensive team, like we've talked about before on the pod. They've been the best defensive team in the league by a lot this year. They're 19th in offense, and their offense is just not good enough, probably, as it stands right now, to get all the way through the West. Yeah, so and that's, if they that's can just... find a way to improve between now and the deadline, that's where you would like to see it, ideally, is to get somebody else that could give them some more juice at that end of the court, because if they get into a big playoff series against Denver or one of these elite teams, they're going to have to be able to keep up, and it's going to be hard to make it a 100-95 game, which is probably the kind of game that they're going to have to try to win.
Well, I will say this.
Despite the fact that the Cat is, you know, Biggs Bemote, self-proclaimed greatest shooting big man of all time, and certainly on the short list, and that Anthony Edwards is an immense offensive talent, but Ant is still early in his development as a crunch time go-to guy. You know, the cojones are there. The decision-making is...
Ant turns the ball over under pressure at times, and the whole league is aware of it. And then the scouting report is, because you really have a hard... He gets going to the basket. He had a great game against the Wizards. He had 38, and he had a great line after the game where he's like, going to the rim doesn't require any... You don't have to have rhythm to go to the rim, what he said.
not when you're that
strong. The rim doesn't need rhythm. Which Ant has a way of being profound. He's one of the best interviews in the league.
But if you're playing with Jade McDaniels and Rudy Gobert, the court gets tighter and smaller, and you don't have a lot of offense out there, even with those two guys.
They actually, ironically, as Finch was unhappy that Towns, and by the way, let me just say this: in early parts of that game, they were getting all their offense through straight pick and rolls. The Hornets just weren't guarding Towns on pick and pops, and he was just killing them. And then Carl did start hunting. The thing about it is they actually want Carl to take more threes because they want the floor space. They want to punish teams a little bit.
He is a terrific shooter. He's got to take more threes. That's one way they can really juice their offense, is if he is shooting more threes. And that was a big thing about that game. He was 14 for 16 in the first half and 8 for 9 from three.
He hit his first eight, and that's when he hit his eighth to go 8 for 8. That's when Eric Collins from the Hornets broadcast, like, he just screamed basically when the eighth straight three went in, which was a deep one.
What was your feel for how Cat responded to Finch basically blasting him after he broke the franchise record for scoring?
Right. So here's the thing. The answer to your question is, I spent quite a bit of time with Cat on Tuesday and Wednesday, and Cat was totally... And I mean, like, I'm not saying that he's telling me how it's 100% how he feels, but I'm just telling you, on and off the record, Cat was totally fine. He understood what Finch was saying. I don't think that it was the greatest moment of his career. It was a real bummer that he scores 60 points in a game.
62.
And that it has, like, no value to him now.
It was an embarrassing 62 point performance.
Yeah, it became like, a meme, unfortunately. Yeah. And the first half was unbelievable.
His agent was saying that there was a request for memorabilia from the game afterwards, and they were like, sure. I mean, you sure you want it? Like, and then, you know, it's real. And you know, a couple of years ago, he scored 60 points in a game. That was his previous career high. And Timberwolves made up little like bucket hats that had Cat with the number 60 on them. And they were leaving on a 4-game road trip the next day. Cat had already packed. And so he showed me he had just packed to wear that hat. He had it on the road with him. And he's like, look at this. he's like, and this just felt weird to wear that. So
The 62 buckets will be something for you to puke into.
Yeah, I did appreciate that he wore it to the game last night. He had it on in the post game interview. I don't know if there was any cameras, but he was wearing it in the locker room. So, you know, I don't know if he was making a joke there or whatever. But more to the smaller moment, Chris Finch, who's always sort of honest, which I respect, like I said, as a media member, I love that when a guy's doing that. I will say, though, if you want to call some of the shots, first off, it was an all-time performance. And whether you like it or not, not the greatest idea to rip a guy who scores 62. You may want to also say, hey, that was pretty good performance, which Chris Finch did 2 days later. He kind of, I would say, walked it back a half step and made sure to acknowledge it with everybody. The thing about it is, like, an immaturity, which is what Chris Finch was saying, is an issue for the Wolves. They had two guys.
They had two guys that he's harped on. Remember when they came to Dallas, he was talking about how much this team had matured.
Yeah.
Right. Well, just as a reminder, last game of the regular season, they had two guys get knocked out for throwing punches. One of them at a wall, Jaden McDaniels, and one of them at a teammate, Rudy.
Yes.
So, you know, and I wouldn't say anybody would say Rudy's immature. So, you know, and then Ant has moments. So, look, it is one of the challenges. Finch is, you know, I don't know if it was handled as maybe politically correct as it could have been, but that was Chris Finch's attempt to hold his team accountable. And I will say this, they didn't play that great against the Wizards.
Yeah.
But they really did move the ball. There was a lot more democratic process. And I will say also that from 30,000 feet, looking at this team, they are a very good team. They are definitely susceptible offensively. They definitely have to worry about this immaturity thing. They are a very, very good team. I think seeing, you know, Rudy play live for the first time this year, Rudy looks spectacular.
Yep.
Maybe you can bring me tape from when he was first starting to win Defensive Player of the Year when he was with the Jazz, where he was quicker, but he has never looked more spry on his feet than he has this season. He
may have been easily the best defensive team in the league because of him.
My God, is he covering ground? I mean, obviously, he's three-time Defensive Player of the Year. He obviously, yep. But like, even by his own standards, he is all over the place. And look, like when Cat and Ant get going in their two-man game, which they're constantly working on, one of the things that I've noticed watching the Wolves this year, when I'm allowed to watch them, is that, you know, a lot of times
you had to go all the way to DC to see.
I know. Can you believe that? One of the things I've noticed is that Cat and Ant pretty much talk going in and out of almost every huddle. Maybe not every single one, but like frequently they're communicating mid-game about stuff. And I asked both of them about what they're talking about. And it's almost always offensive two-man game stuff. Whether or not it's super successful every night, they are making an earnest effort to play together. And, you know, again, you can bring me tape that disputes this. You can bring me numbers that dispute it. When I've watched the Wolves and I've talked to all of them, and when my view, and I've talked to Finch about it, Towns is actively trying to engage Ant as the leading scorer. He is trying to, you know, when they first came into the league, it was Ant who was sort of setting up Towns. Towns is now doing more setting up, and he's trying. And again, you may be able to bring me advanced stats that disputes this. He's trying to take care of the big man. You know, he's trying to take care of Gobert.
Yeah, and honestly, that's Cat obviously missed a lot of last year, but even last year when it was really clunky and it wasn't, things weren't fitting. When I talked to Rudy, Rudy said, man, and obviously this is when D'Angelo Russell is their point guard. When I talked to Rudy, Rudy's like, you know, Cat's the guy who passes the ball to me the most. Like, I feel, you know, Rudy's always felt like he's had some good chemistry with Cat. And look, the one reason I was surprised that Finch was that blunt and that harsh, despite the fact that I think he had a lot of accurate points based on that specific night, is because I do think you have to give Cat credit for willingly accepting that it's Ant's team, that he's the number two guy, you know, he's the number two option, figuring out how to kind of fit into that role and thrive in that role. And he's obviously the weak link defensively, but you're not the number one defense if the weak link is just completely mailing it in. He is much more often than not playing hard within a scheme that protects him defensively and handling his responsibilities there. So I think when we've talked about this before, I do think that Cat deserves credit for the way that he has adapted and fit into a team that's now tied for first place in the Western Conference. And for all those reasons, I was surprised that Finch came out just with the flamethrower the other night like he did.
The only reason I'll take the other side of that is for what you said before. They're tied for first in the West. Tied in the loss column with Oklahoma City. They're one loss ahead of Denver and the Clippers. They can't afford to be losing games in Charlotte. Like that I think is what caused him to come out like that. And I get it. For them, it's going to be hugely important as a young team to have home court advantage in these series. I know they've got some vets, but with Anthony and Carl, guys who haven't been in the playoffs much, Jaden McDaniels has been in the playoffs. Obviously didn't really play last year in the playoffs.
He definitely didn't play.
They didn't play in the playoffs because that was the last game of the season. That's right. Like it will be very important for them to have home court advantage and to have an easier road potentially in the first round playing maybe a play-in team. Right. So like they can't afford to be losing these kind of games. And that I think, again, he probably went a little too hard just in general, But I can understand the frustration because you're trying to move this thing along, and that loss might be the thing that has them fourth instead of first in
and
2 months.
And look, it's been a heck of a half season in Minnesota, but it has been a half season, and it's going to be a fight for the top seed in the West.
Which is kind of what Rudy was saying last night, which is that, you know, being in first through 40 games doesn't mean anything. And that's a guy who's been in first through 40 games, I think, several times.
That's right. And through 82.
Young Thunder just keep racking up wins. I mean, obviously.
I know, they do.
Champion Nuggets. The Clippers, who they didn't stumble for a couple weeks after the Harden trade, they'd be probably at the top now. And then here come the Suns. Here come
the Clippers. As of right now, as of Thursday afternoon, it's projected by our internal system to be Thunder, Clippers, Nuggets, Wolves in that order.
Suns at five or no?
Suns at six.
Really?
Pelicans at five.
Pelicans, I'll bet against that one.
So the Clippers are about to go out on their Grammy trip, the final Grammy trip for the Clippers in the Clippers history, because they won't need to clear out of crypto for the Grammys for whatever, 7 to 10 days, sorry, next year. So the Lakers and Clippers about to head out east. So we'll see if the Clippers can keep that winning.
By the way, just to set the world on fire for a second, Mavericks projected to finish 7th, Warriors 8th, Kings 9th, Jazz 10th, Lakers 11th.
Just that's interesting on the Warriors, I'll tell you
and
that.
Rockets 12th.
Rockets had a bad loss last night.
Phase two is taking a little dip since they had to deal with bond temps, that's for sure.
The other team that played last night, we're not going to have a lot of Wizards talk on the pod this year, but they let their coach go, Wes Unseld. I didn't know I was seeing...
Oh, promoted him. He's in the front office.
I didn't know I was... I just said hello to him very briefly. I didn't know it was the last time he's going to be coaching the Wizard last night. I didn't know I was seeing that. The Wizards have 7 wins. I don't know how many losses they've got, but they've got 7 wins.
A lot more than 7.
I think you can. I can sum this game up in the Wizards' experience with, you know, like I said, the Wolves didn't play particularly well, but, you know, Conley was out. They won. The Wolves had a bigger lead, but it was a 5-point game with about 3.5 minutes or so to go. The Wizards get a stop and they're in transition, and Jordan Poole pulls up from 27 feet in a 5-point game with the ball. And there was an audible groan inside Capital One Arena when that sucker clanged off the rim. I don't know if I think the Wolves scored immediately. In my head, it was an and one, but I was just like, oh my God.
Like, I'm not going to sit here and try to say Wes Unseld is Red Auerbach, but this is a terrible basketball team that was built to be a terrible basketball team and is a terrible basketball team.
Yeah, and then it's not a serious team. And like, I don't know, man, I'll be honest with you. I haven't seen the Wizards live once this season.
We don't have to break down the Wizards. What I would say is that they believed that I don't think they saw themselves as a playoff team. Clearly, but I think they didn't see themselves having 7 wins. I think what they wanted was for their players to have something to fight for still in January, February, March, even if that was just fighting for the 10th seed.
But that was also never real. That was not, it's not realistic either.
You can say
I'm
that.
I'm not defending
the way they looked at it.
Well, I'm not saying that Wes Unseld didn't deserve to get let go. Their team has been terrible, but this was going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year.
Yes.
And it's one of the worst teams in the league this year. And we're probably going to see 3 teams win less than 20 games, in part because the league is deeper in good teams and teams trying to win than it has been in a long time. So it's not particularly surprising to me, based off how the season is going, that they're this bad either. Now, they've had a lot of fourth quarters where they've fallen apart late.
Well,
the defense has been awful.
That's the reason that Wes kind of got let go, is because they've had some second halves. Even this game, they were ahead in the first half. Yeah. They've had some games where they were either ahead or right in the first half, and they've just withered down the stretch. Again, we don't have to look blow by blow. Here's what's important. Here's what I want to say. The challenge with the Wizards rebuild right now is that they don't really have extra picks.
Yeah.
They got 3 second-rounders for Bradley Beal, and getting off of that contract was important for them to do. And you could almost argue if that was the only thing that they got accomplished this year, that they would have stepped forward, but they ended up flopping that to get Jordan Poole, who is not working out. That is now a toxic contract at this point. So the challenge that they have is they obviously are going to need draft picks to restock that team, more than just the picks that they have. And they owe a pick going forward, I think.
Yeah,
it's an extraordinarily unlikely to convey pick to the Knicks.
It's
I agree, but the point is, all over the world. The point is, they're actually
negative pick. They're actually minus one picks, first round picks. So the question is, you know, in this next 2 weeks, the deadline's 2 weeks from today, can they acquire any picks? And I think just about the whole roster is available, and Tyus Jones being at the front of that. And they are going to be hunting for draft picks. That's what they need the most, especially if they can squeeze a first, even if they're looking at guys where they're not even getting a quote unquote good first. They have to do this. Mm-hmm. And that's a mandate. And so whether or not they're going to be able to complete any trades, I mean, you know, I think if you look at their roster, the guys who you're looking at possible, the one thing we talk around the league is that Bilal Coulibaly, their rookie from France, by the way, McMahon, Tuesday night, Rudy Gobert's, a documentary about Rudy Gobert's life was shown. It's coming out soon at the French Embassy. There was an event at the French Embassy. And, you know, with Bilal in attendance. But anyway, other than Coulibaly, I think they'll talk about anybody on their roster. I think Tyus is the most likely to be traded.
They have to trade Tyus Jones because there will be interest in him, and he's in a contract year.
I'll be stunned if Tyus Jones isn't traded in the next 2 weeks.
I tell you what, though, you know, DeJounte Murray's on the market. We just saw Terry Rozier get moved. They get a first round pick there.
Malcolm Brogdon.
Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, there's a few point guards out there that I think.
Yeah, I don't really think they're getting a first for Tyus Jones, but they'll probably get multiple seconds for him. And I'll be stunned if he's on the team. Just makes too much sense.
Denny Advia is a guy who, you know, he's developed into a nice defensive player. He signed a contract that is not viewed as bad.
Basically, a mid-level contract is what he's agreed to.
You know, I don't think they're looking anxious to get rid of him, but I do think there's some desire for him on the market.
The two most obvious guys on the team are who you were just going to say, Daniel Gafford and Tyus Jones. Those are the two guys that make sense to move. I personally would be trying to move Kyle Kuzma if I were them. I don't think he's going to get traded personally.
I think their price for Kuzma is pretty high, and they do.
That's why I don't think he'll get traded.
I mean, the word on the street is that if you call the Wizards right now and ask for Kuzma, they want two firsts for him. So I don't know if they're getting that. But
whether it's second round picks or first round picks or whatever, I mean, Michael Winger, the first thing he did was bring in Will Dawkins, who's came from Oklahoma City, he is a draft and develop guy, and they're going to be drafting and developing players. And whether they're getting seconds or firsts or whatever, like you said, the next 2 weeks is going to be about getting as much as they can to move forward with the guys that they've got.
Also, they have Travis Schlenk in their front office, who was the general manager in Atlanta. One of the best drafters, draft record.
Another scout who is going to be out there looking for players too.
He was a part of the guys who built the dynasty in Golden State through the draft. If you look at Atlanta, even though they have not achieved, their draft picks have generally been really good. Jalen Johnson maturing this year into a real, real good looking player. Another good looking pick from Travis Schlenk. So they want to let Travis go out there and find them players, but they need picks to do it. So I would think that the Wizards would be adding picks in the next 2 weeks if you're looking for players to go. So, it was an interesting night in Washington, to say the least, but not as interesting as your night in Dallas, McMahon. So
per usual.
I had no such excitement in the post-game interviews. Just putting my foot in my mouth. All right. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson and Parker, our producers for this show. Thank you to McMahon and Bontemps. Thank you for listening. We got a little something coming up that next week where they've got a little wrinkle in the Hoop Collective. So the show that typically publishes on Monday, the podcast is now going to air on ESPN2 on Tuesdays in the afternoon. I don't even know what time it's going to air on Tuesdays. But if you believe it or not, you know, we're on the cutting edge. What time?
2
o'clock. Okay. We're on the cutting edge, guys. We're going to we're taking this show to linear TV. Ooh. That's right. Nobody is more forward-looking than us here at the Hoop Collective. So that starts next week. But you can still hear the podcast on Monday, as usual, and watch it on YouTube. But, you know, if you're not doing anything on Tuesday at 2 o'clock, you can check us out. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.